We're floating like butterflies and stinging like bees. Rumble, you badass jet pilots, rumble. Welcome to the Wingman Show. I'm Drew Brown. We're here to inspire, entertain, and learn so we can all grow. Happiness and serenity are the keys. To you, my friend, my wingman, my main man, I'd like to introduce to you Dr. Paul Thompson. Hey, Paul.
Good morning, Mr. Drew. Ladies and gentlemen, you've just heard from the one and only Drew Brown, Dark Gable, the American Dream. He's the man, the myth, the legend. He's the pilot's pilot, the role model's role model, and most importantly, his royal fullness. Thank you for listening to the podcast, looking at the podcast. And if you could, please remember to like, share, and subscribe. If you're watching on YouTube, hit that thumbs up button. We would appreciate it. I'm doing very good this morning, Mr. Drew. How are you?
I'm doing great. You ready to start this show?
I'm ready.
All right, well, check this out.
Bandini's American Dream. Bad, B-A-D.
Okay.
Bandini's American Dream. Since Daddy traveled the world at a young age and quickly realized that people were way beyond what they looked like, and he did not judge people by the color of their skin or what they believed in, he judged them by their spirit and their character. So when he went back to the world, he had an edge because his blinders were open, and he weaved and hustled with his God-given talent to inspire and motivate his way into society, knowing just one thing, that whatever he did and no matter how he made it, his son would get an education, because he realized that's the one thing that he lacked was a formal education. Although he was the dean of street smarts, reading people, survival, and really knowing that shorty always comes through university, education was his number one priority for his son. And he knew that that was what was needed to be successful in America. He saw it, he learned it, and he taught it to his son. His son taught it to his grandchildren, and they both proved his theory correct.
That sounds good. That's going to be like the opening or something. Is that going to be written or spoken?
That's the basis of the documentary.
Okay, that's your summary.
Nice. It has nothing to do with white and American dream. Mm-hmm. I don't know how he did, but I'm not kidding. As quickly as I could say it, he made it. And the one goddamn thing that he did not joke about more than fighting, championships, all that BS, the one thing he did not joke about was education. To the point of, I went to college like I was actually going to high school. It never was a transition to me. It was just something that was happening. How I was going, who was going to pay, all that stuff was kind of more up to me, but it didn't matter. This is where I was going. I was headed because that's the one thing he preached. And if you really want to know the truth, he was so proud of me for that one thing. He loved that I played basketball. He couldn't play. He swung a baseball bat with the wrong hands. Zero athletic talent.
Everybody didn't have it.
Zero.
Yeah.
White man can't jump. BS. Yeah. Bandini can't jump.
Okay. I told the same way. Zero.
Zero musical talent.
Yeah. Right. Some people
zero.
I mean, I told him was doing some stuff. I thought he was just making play and make believe, like he was retarded or something. At the age of 18, it wasn't there. Everybody's not doing five basketballs and making a souffle at the same time.
No, I'm not kidding. My father used to make me dance for his friends because he had no rhythm. All the idiosyncrasies.
So you like one of those guys in New Orleans with the bottle caps on the heels, dancing in the streets. Which I thought was
you really want to know? Kind of like that in front of his friends. And then my grandmother used to make me sing Hava Nagila in front of her friends.
Okay. Does anybody have like an accordion? Is there music going?
No, I was dancing to the Jackson 5.
Okay.
Dance, 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 dancing machine. Okay. Can you get down? Can you get down?
Yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah, it's a slight change of thing. Did you get that message I sent about that concert coming in September?
Yes, I did. I don't like those people, but Katrina did, obviously.
Oh, really? You didn't like them? Okay.
No, I like the SOS band.
SOS, that's mainly what I was looking for.
Right. The other ones, no, I don't do that.
Can function.
There's certain music I don't do. Anyway, I want to just get back to that one thing. My father broke all the stereotypes for a black man that they could have. This is way before anything.
Some people can't, it's not there. And other folks, it's there. They don't like it. I mean, Camille is great at all her sports.
There's also how you grow up. My father didn't have no damn time for no basketball, baseball, running.
That's a new generation.
Was trying to survive. He was going from house to house with a note on his chest saying, "Will you take care of my boy for a little while?"
Yeah, same here. I mean, my parents, they worked. They worked till they retired.
Right. He sold hangers, I think he told me, at 6. You know, clothing hangers, mm-hmm. get from the cleaners and things. He sold on the corner. That's when he started his work thing. So actually, you know, he didn't have time for soccer, and he didn't have a soccer mom.
That's new generation, lots of time, integrated world, freedoms that were non-existent and could even result in death. So there are a lot of things that a younger person could take for granted that, you know, I'd say, like, this didn't exist. This wasn't possible. This was freaking dangerous. You know, so there are a lot of things that there's certain folks who can take for granted. For most Black people, stuff is, you're talking maybe a generation. This is new. This is still New Jack City. We're just getting to retirement now. You're a baby boomer. We're just getting to retirement now. The experiment is still going on. It'll be reviewed. The whole integration thing will be reviewed maybe 50 years after we're gone.
It's being revealed to me now. No, not 50 years after we're gone. It's being revealed to me now. I know what's going on. I mean, I know that there's something bigger than us, and I know good overcomes evil. I do know that. I'm not waiting for me to die to realize anything.
Oh, I didn't tell you to do that. I'm just saying, in terms of analysis, you're just still going over, you know, the founding fathers.
It's just that it's called evolution. It's called change. The one thing that people don't realize, the one thing that won't ever change, and I'm not using the N word, but won't ever change, is change. You know, this is a good subject that we're talking about. Is marriage necessary anymore? We were talking about it's a new generation. You know, people are not getting married. Yet we come from that last generation that it's decent and proper, and that's what you're supposed to do. So unless it's for tax benefits or you have a child, and really it is for tax benefits, do you need to get married anymore? You know, the new music that's coming. I'm not kidding. Why do you think there's violence at a concert, Paul? Because all they talk about is killing and guns and money, and I'll take your shit, okay? So what do you expect? What do you expect? What happened to the word love
songs
anymore?
What is that?
Yeah, no, I love money.
That's why I wanted to go see the SOS band, Just Be Good to Me. It was a love song. Remember?
Yep.
We should play that. I mean, it's great. I just looked at it the other night. It's like, this is really good. They were on Soul Train. This is a long time ago. So yeah, there is not. And I think that's why there's a lot of unhappiness. I can get into that more in the recording.
No, we can. We could talk about it right now. Haiti, South Africa, and Cuba. They're rioting. Poor people are tired of being poor. And the governments are keeping these people poor, and they don't realize the masses. That's what revolution is. That's how it starts, by the rich getting richer and the poor getting poorer. And in case you're poor in this country, don't you worry about it, because I have some news to tell you, Paul. You know, for all the poor people, they don't realize that. Let me read this so I get it right. Yes, earnings season, corporate earnings season, the most wonderful time of the year. JP Morgan, Chase, and Goldman Sachs both blew their profit expectations for the second quarter out of the water. JPM more than doubled its profit. Pepsi crushed its earnings too. You see, so the rich are getting richer. Mm-hmm. That's the point. And that's what causes revolution. You have to have fairness on this planet. And when you don't, and when you have the equilibrium go off balance, you will get people in the street, because there are no kidding. When everybody said that the economy was good here, remember, they just talked economy. Well, why in the hell were the food lines so long? If the economy was so great, they said they had food lines like around blocks and blocks and blocks.
In some cases, yeah.
And people are not on that line for fun. Yet, oh, one more thing I forgot to tell you. Oh, there's a great one. Richard Branson went into space.
Dude.
Yes. him and his friend Jeff Bezos, who are both multi-billionaires, not billionaires. No, who's a billionaire? Oprah. Chris Rock said that if Bill Gates woke up from a nightmare that he had Oprah money, he would slit his throat on the way down from jumping off the roof.
Yes, I remember that.
And the people who are really rich are the people who own blue.
Yes.
The color blue. Now they're having a battle between spaceships because Jeff Bezos of Amazon is launching his spaceship this week, and they're going to see who goes higher. So that was the rich man's news.
Right.
Paul, it can't go on like this.
Yeah. Well, you know, who goes higher? You know, there's, I did watch that when he went into, when he went to space, when Branson went in space. And that was interesting. I'm just interested in the physics aspect of it by being launched from, you know, a mothership and going up, which saves him from getting, you know, crushed from the ground up as opposed to a normal space launch. They just, they, no massive G forces on them, which is pretty unique. I was impressed by that. And I think you're up there, what, there's like 3 or 4 minutes, zero G. Well, you know, that's good. You can actually zero G in a lot of airplanes, even inadvertently.
Will you tell them that that's what you used to teach? Inverted negative spins in a Navy jet, which is the craziest thing I've ever probably done in a jet voluntarily. So okay. Can you explain this negative G thing? Because you do not have to go that high to do this.
Okay. Well, you know, it's that is extremely violent. Now, you did you do that in training? Did you do the okay, the out of, it was called the out of control.
Yes.
Out of control program. I was one of the forerunners in that. I volunteered to do it. I get some stuff in return. Okay. You know, I didn't have
What'd
to fly at night. Huh?
What'd you get?
Oh, well, basically they're looking for people to do this, and there were like three of us that volunteered. And the deal was he had to be a fleet guy. It was like a whole bunch of quals. There's only like about a half dozen people could even do it. And
Wait a minute. A fleet guy. That means you have had to already been out to sea.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. You had to have had a fleet tour. Just a full fleet tour out to sea one time.
Okay.
And about half the instructors were, half of them weren't. And I agreed to it. Say, well, if you do it, I said, if I do this, I don't want to fly at night. That was my deal. No night flying. Isn't that something? That's the we can get later how ironic that was. But that was the big thing. I instructed in all the phases, but I didn't want to be bothered with the guns, and I didn't want to do the night stuff because I was working on my resume to get out and go to the airlines, and I like daytime stuff. And the good thing about doing it was extremely violent, but you could write your own schedule, and you really weren't instructing. You were in the back seat, and you did everything. It was really short flights. They used specialized airplanes. That
what do you mean specialized?
These were T2 trainer jets that had special lap straps, not just the regular lap straps that you normally had in the airplane. These are special ones that cinch down. They're big, wide ones, several of them, because it was much more violent than what you're used to. And usually at the end of those flights, they'd have to look at the airplane really good, see if anything came off of it, which nothing ever did when I flew it, but you never knew. All the fluids are gone. The instruments are gone. It's, you know, it can't handle it. So basically it was always on a beautiful VFR day, which is visual flight rules, bright and sunny, because you're not going to have, you know, nothing's going to work in the airplane except the engine and your watch. All those other things were trash. So it was like air. You always did like about 15 miles in the field from 15 to 27,000 feet. In any case, that inverted spin was particularly difficult, and they're positive and negative Gs.
Can you explain a little bit about positive and negative Gs? Because we always pull positive Gs, and that's where the blood rushes from your head into your feet. And if you don't have these special suits that we had called G suits that squeeze you in the abdomen, the thighs, the calves to keep that blood rushing all the way, you will black out. And you can actually pull so many Gs that your vision goes like a little straw. It goes boop, and you can black out.
Right.
So the other part of that, though, and this is what that's not violent. Because actually, when you black out, you'll let go of the stick and you will be unblacked out. You can't stay blacked out and keep pulling G's. But right. Negative G's is probably one of the worst feelings I've had in the airplane because I felt out of control. I was upside down with my head on the canopy and I couldn't reach shit. No right. throttle, no stick. I was completely out of control.
And you're
very good at all.
Yeah, and you're 6'5" with long arms. You still can't get it. That's why
Please explain the violence in that flight.
Well, you know, it's just a G. It's like, you know, if you're sitting down right now, you're at 1G. Most of us are at 1G, acceleration of gravity going to the earth. Okay, fine. When you're in an airplane, you can actually pull back and increase that force, that upward force. You're going away from the earth. You're going away from the center of the earth. You're kind of increasing the G. If you do the opposite and go down towards the center of the earth, you've already got 1G on you. Now you're helping it more. So that's like a negative. So we're at one. All of a sudden we go to like zero G. We're floating. Right. You're floating to zero. Right. Going down, you're floating more. Now minus right. one, minus two.
So can you explain the flight, the actual flight that you did? Just give us the quick trip.
The typical inverted spin, basically. There's a couple ways to enter it, but I always do it in the form of a loop. I'd come up around and be pointing at the sky, going at about a 45-degree angle, going up near the top, about 27,000. That's where I like to start. I started at 20. I climb up to about 25, 26, 27. I wanted everything in case things didn't come out right. Because you would have to eject at 10,000. That happens really quick. Right. So I had to plan. I said, you know, if you enter this thing at 20,000, go inverted, you usually want about 5 or 6,000 feet because 27 was the top and I want to get in any trouble. So, you know, you're going upside down at a 45-degree angle, upside down, and you just pull the power back to idle. And you just watch the airspeed bleed out and the airplane keeps going up. Like, okay, it's fine. Up into a point, you know, then gravity makes it stop and you slide backward. And then you actually put opposite controls in as it's happening.
What does that mean? You take the rudder, stick one way and you take the rudder the other way.
The other way, yeah. Push the stick. You make an uncoordinated flight. You make the airplane deliberately uncoordinated. We're trying to get it into a spin. And the whole purpose of that program was to put a student in his worst possible situation and have them get out of it. Hopefully it'll never happen.
Mm-hmm.
Happen. It's like you have a fire extinguisher. Hopefully we never use this fire extinguisher.
Correct.
Hopefully, but we have it. That's a tool in your toolkit. Anyway, you start this and you hit opposite controls. And after a while, if you ran out of airspeed, boom, the airplane would depart. And it would do all kinds of things. I don't know exactly what it digs. You need to see it from the ground. I've seen videos of it. And the thing is, it's tumbling in all directions. You sense one thing. You look at your instruments. But the thing is, the good thing about it was that you could use any spin recovery procedure of any Navy airplane in this T2. It would work. So anybody could practice, no matter what you came from. You know, okay, do your procedure for your A7, your F4, whatever it was.
It'll come out. So how long did you stay in that inverted spin?
It probably felt like, I would time guys, it probably felt to the student, probably felt like about 5 hours. In reality, it was probably 10, 12 seconds. Because you get something called time distortion. You don't know, you're in a stressful situation. You don't know how long it lasts.
Correct.
The guy tried to mug me on the street in Chicago one time. And I kind of reversed things on him. He attacked me at night on a rainy night on Michigan Avenue in front of the Walgreens. I'm going off topic here, but I'll get back on. Shoved me towards a plate glass window, which I didn't want to go to. And I just did an Aikido wrist lock on him and turned him. Don't even remember doing it. We just ended up that way, muscle memory from doing stuff for a lot of years.
Did he know who he was messing with?
I didn't see him messing
with Dr. Paul, a Navy freaking badass jet pilot.
Well, I don't think it mattered. He wanted some money anyway. He actually, he asked me not to hurt him because I hit him. I hit him in a very bad situation, and I didn't hurt him. hope, glad he didn't pull out a weapon on me. Obviously, he didn't have one. But the thing was that in that thing, I relived it myself. How long did it take? And it felt like it was like 10 minutes I was fighting him. In reality, it was probably begun in over, I'd say, probably 45 seconds at the most, probably 30 seconds.
Wow.
You know, it was a night in the rain. But anyway, yeah. So anyway, you get time distortion. Now, you know, I don't know how long it was. Maybe it was 10 seconds. Maybe it was 10 minutes. But when you get into that spin, I would ask the students, I'd say, okay, how long do you think we're in it? And I would hit the clock. So I knew. And guys would say, I hear everything from like 10 seconds to like 2 minutes. And the average was like about 16 seconds. You know, that was my own little personal experiment.
Wow.
So great. You know, it was basically, you know, you were doing negative G's, positive G's and stuff, and hope the airplane, but the airplane always came out. You could just take your hands off of it. In fact, most commercial jets are like that too. You know, you don't hear about jets spinning. If you just let it go because of the aerodynamics, they've got the wing twist where the thing will sense the relative wind and will take itself out. But there was an Airbus that crashed in South Atlantic. It was in Air France, and they basically got out of control, and the airplane crashed into the sea. But the reality was the first officer had panicked, and he held the stick back, and he never released it. That airplane would have probably recovered, but it went into a stall at 38,000 feet and hit the ocean in a full stall. And the analysis showed that the guy just froze and he had it locked and you got to let it go.
Did you say Air France?
It was Air France.
Well, guess what? Guess what else is in France?
What's in France?
COVID. And the president just said, if you want to go to a restaurant, if you would like to go to the movies, if you would like to go to a store, you're going to have to get a vaccine. You're going to have to get vaccinated. And over 1 million people went the next day to get vaccinated. Is something wrong with these people? Because I even heard somebody say, they'll give me a vaccine on my way to my grave. No, you'll already be on the way to your grave.
That'd be a waste of vaccine.
That this COVID is coming back, Paul, and people are still not getting vaccinated. It's a pure science thing now. Are they that ignorant, honest to God? Because they're the same people, believe it or not, who drink a lot of coffee, don't they, Paul? They drink a lot of coffee. And guess what? Coffee's going to double in price because some people don't believe that the weather is changing. Some people don't believe in climate change. Well, it's so hot in Brazil that there's a drought and the coffee beans are not growing. And so coffee is expected to rise. And somebody said, how much more expensive can Starbucks get? So it seems like the same people not getting vaccinated, the same people don't believe that fires in, you know, in California, it's going crazy. Those spaceships, man, them firing them lasers, zoo, 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 zoo. And it's really not funny. A lot of land is being destroyed.
Yeah. I have friends who live out in the West Coast. They say it's hot and hotter. That Lake Mead in Nevada and parts in California, they've been in a drought for years. It's going down. They supply water to Las Vegas. Some goes to Los Angeles. Whereas there's water shortages in the U.S. Every once in a while, there's droughts up here, but we get plenty of rain. They're not getting anything out in the West Coast.
Don't you think it's because of climate change?
Oh, yeah, clearly it's climate change. It's hot. It's hot in Western Canada.
So give me the psychological pattern of these people who are not getting vaccine and who don't believe in climate change, because it's a clearly strike against education and science. This is not a belief. This is not a theory. This is objective. This is not subjective.
Well, you're in a highly politicized era. Many things are partisan. And there's a natural inclination for a lot of people, a lot of Americans to be oppositional. There's an oppositional streak that goes through there. Some of it's from child rearing, and I think a lot of it is from frustration because so many things are changing so quickly, and there's so much information that there's information overload. I don't want to process it. You give me too much to think about. I want to do what I want to do because I want to do it. So this collective of, or this collective thought of doing things for the greater good for most people, and we're more of an individualistic kind of nation. Everybody's kind of on their own on average.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, we're kind of selfish, because the opposition is not because I've got scientific evidence that disproves. I don't have anything. I just don't feel like doing it. I don't even feel like looking to you. I don't want to listen to you. You know, I'm not getting those because I don't want to get. Maybe some people are afraid of getting pinpricks, but I think at this point you're crazy.
I think the generation between the spanking generation and the timeout generation has changed a lot.
Oh yeah.
Like we were talking about marriage. Is marriage necessary anymore? Times have changed a lot.
Right.
I mean, good news, and I can't wait for you to talk about this because you've gone in depth on this. First, I want to give you what avant-garde means, because there's somebody whose last name was changed to avant-garde. And avant-garde, the definition is new and unusual or experimental ideas, especially in the arts or the people introducing them. And that was an album, that was the name of an album by John Coltrane. And the young lady we're going to talk about now is her father, who I'm going to let Paul tell you what his name was.
Yes.
He changed her last name to Avant-Garde. She is the first American Black girl to win the spelling bees. I think she only studied for 2 years. There's so much more to her, which I'm going to let Paul talk about. But put it this way, she wants to go to Harvard, she wants to go to WNBA, and she wants to work at NASA. Dr. Paul, please tell them about this fascinating young lady.
Zyla Avant-Garde. Very, very interesting. The name, you know, you talked about the name, and I think the first name has some, is some kind of Asiatic. Well, I forgot what it is. I'm not going to make up what I think it is, but yeah, avant-garde. Yes. New and unusual. I looked at the names of her parents, and they all have different names, but the father's last name is Space Time. I forget what his first name is. Yeah. Space Time. SpaceTime. So that's rather unusual. So I don't know if he's a physicist or extraterrestrial leanings, but in any case, she was studied for 2 years. She wins the spelling bee, and I found out that wasn't her only spelling bee. She got $50,000 for winning the Scripps Howard spelling bee, but she had also recently received $10,000 for some other spelling bee. So the Scripps Howard, I guess, is the big time. That's the NBA All-Star game kind of thing.
Right.
So apparently she's got a lot of capabilities. Apparently she's good at math, a lot of things. And her father gave her the challenge of doing the spelling thing just rather recently, since she's doing other stuff. That's exceptional. But what got me, and you probably heard of her basketball skills. There's, oh, she's good at basketball. So I look at the YouTube. She's not good. She's very good. You know, she's got three Guinness World Records.
Yes.
Dribbling basketball simultaneously.
Yes.
Do that commercial with Steph Curry. And she's doing a thing, and she's actually doing it better than he is, which is exceptional. You remember,
you need to YouTube that. Anybody who's out there, after you watch us on YouTube.
Yeah.
And if you do watch us, please subscribe.
And she's practicing. She's doing blindfold stuff.
Oh, my goodness.
Pete Maravich did some of that. Blindfold and throwing the ball, then taking the thing off and throwing the ball, hitting a little steel pole and having the ball. It's just a narrow pole, not a wall, just a narrow pole. Have it come right back to her. It's not going left, not going right. It's coming right back to her. She does that again and again and again. Practice. Then there's footage of her running full court. She can play. She can pass, shoot, does the whole thing.
It's amazing. I'm telling you, you need to YouTube.
Multi-talented.
Didn't you send me the YouTube?
The YouTube? I can send it to you.
No, you did, I think.
Okay.
That's how
okay.
I saw it, I believe.
Yeah. She's got that capability. And one good thing, she is, you know, obviously a smart person and an active person. She's running full speed. She's not one of those children that just eats and sits and watches TV all day. That's bad for your health. Young people need to move. Everybody needs to move. Senior citizens need to move. Old people need to move. People We have physical problems, needing to move. You get up and move, not just sit and watch TV and get fat, gain weight, and develop chronic health conditions that are going to shorten your life. And you'll be, you know, maybe jacked up in your 20s. There are people, your young people dying of coronary conditions in their teens, early 20s.
Because of what they eat.
What they eat and what they drink. You know, Red Bull will give you wings. That's what the commercial says. Well, you know, we can look at that two ways, you know. You know, you can take so much simulation. Oh, yeah. So we shouldn't get sued. But yeah, you want to be a wingman. You want to have like Navy wings, or even Air Force wings, or Army wings. You don't need those Red Bull wings because you didn't take the vaccine. You get them all.
Amazing. Oh, I believe that people drink Red Bull that don't take the vaccine. 100%.
You can get it. We get a 7-Eleven. You can get it by the case. You can go to Costco and get thousands. I tried a couple of them. And you talk about coffee. I don't drink coffee. And maybe that's a bad thing.
Well,
I do go to
whiskey drink. The new whiskey drink I heard is Red Bull and vodka.
Red Bull and vodka.
Yeah, I think that's actually old. I haven't partaked in a long time. How about a wingman story I want to tell you about?
Okay.
I said, remind me of my really good friend. You said Huey Lewis in the news?
Yes.
No, it's my really good friend, Hugh Lewis. You and Bliss Lewis, who have a son, Hassan, and my dear girl, Chandra. Anyway, we met them, I can't tell you how, maybe 40 years ago, because the kids were still young, very young, on a cruise. We happened to be the family right behind them, mm-hmm. right behind them. And it's like we have my daughter, Taryn, and his son, Hassan, are the same age and the same with Chandra and Drew. So anyway, we became very good friends. We became such good friends that when Taryn was recruited by everybody in the country, they lived in Austin. They actually lived in Round Rock, Texas, but they lived right there. I think that's one of the reasons Taryn picked Texas, other than Jody Conrad came in a Cadillac and had more class than anybody I've ever seen. And Hugh Lewis was a big-time sportscaster in Austin. I mean, he was the man. And he's just so smart. His family's so great. His wife's name, actually Bliss, she's one of the only people I know who actually reflects her name perfectly. Perfectly. Anyway, they've been our friends for a long time. But I want to hail up my man, Hugh Lewis, for being my wingman and going through a lot of things in my life with me and always sticking by me. So there's my wingman.
Well, that's good. That's good. That's good.
Oh, Dr. Paul's book club, Angels and Demons. Angels and Demons by
Dan Brown.
Okay. And also he wrote
The Da Vinci Code, I know.
If you want to start reading again, pick up those books. They're page turners is what they are. And then if you really want to start reading more, this is my suggestion. I love James Patterson. I love James Patterson, even though it's a little gory, but the suspense is incredible and they're page turners. And we need to keep reading, everybody. That movie in your head's your own. Reading is what makes it. I'm telling you, you could be the smartest person in the world. If you don't speak correctly, if you don't text properly, if you can't write an email correctly, people will assume that you're stupid. Even if you've come here from another country, guess what? You're here now. Learn English.
I like the pictures of dogs in the background.
You see that? That's my four babies. You know, here's a dumb joke, but you know who loves me more? My wife, Katrina, or the dogs? Mm-hmm. Well, the answer is I did a test. I locked them all in the trunk of a car, and I came back in 2 hours, and my dogs were happy to see me, but Katrina wasn't.
There you go. There you go.
Well, and then the joke.
Ha, ha, ha. Some of you are going to get some complaints on that one, too, probably.
I'm sure. But I didn't lock them in the trunk. I'm sure there are people say, oh, my God, I knew something was wrong.
Yeah.
I knew something was wrong with this whole wingman thing.
Yeah, he's shaky. I knew he was shaky.
Love you, Paul. Thanks for doing the show.
Thanks for having me on. And ladies and gentlemen, please remember to like, share, and subscribe. And if you're watching on YouTube, hit that thumbs up button. We'd appreciate it.
100%. We hope you enjoyed our show. We truly thank you for your time. It's our most valuable commodity.
So we're still floating like butterflies and stinging like bees. Rumble, you badass jet pilots, rumble. Dr. Paul Thompson, Drew Brown, we both say goodbye. See you guys later.
All right. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.